A62. Number 2B.
We go out from the infinite one, see, and see that we can define it through a differentiated sense of the oneness, namely through 7 different synonyms. We differentiate, but we do not leave the wholeness and oneness because they still refer to the one. We naturally see that each synonymous term must be defined through each other synonymous term, or else we would split them apart. So, can you see that when I say God is mind, that this does not come up to a true definition until I see that that mind is also spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love? In other words, I define then each synonymous term through all the other synonymous terms, so that not one synonymous term can stand alone, truly. Naturally, in speaking and writing, we leave them mostly alone, but in our consciousness, the meaning of it is that when Mrs. Eddy says, God is mind, she actually says, God is mind, and mind is spirit, and mind is soul, and mind is principle, and mind is life, and mind is truth, and mind is love. So that mind is all the 7 synonymous term again, which is the one. Can you see how we are not leaving the one, the infinite whole, though we differentiate? So on this principle, Mrs. Eddy works on and on and on until she has written the whole textbook, in which not one concept is outside the infinite one, when every statement therefore must be related finally to the infinite one, or that statement does not yield its meaning. Yes? Okay, let's say we got it. But we take 2 weeks to really to get it. So in this way, Mrs. Eddy built up a new language of the capitalized terms, which is now, as you see, completely different from the human language. Can you see that now? Suddenly, Mrs. Eddy will define a synonymous term completely different than in the language of ordinary life. Because in ordinary life, mind and love are not synonymous. Isn't it? Or in ordinary life, soul and truth are not synonymous. If you would ask anybody right out of on the street, look here, is soul and truth the same? He would say, are you dotty? They are two completely different concepts. They have nothing to do with each other. Isn't that so? And in Christian Science, when we capitalize them, they are synonymous. So we have to be aware, you see, that when Mrs. Eddy capitalizes these 7 terms, which are also used in ordinary language, she doesn't just make those terms bigger by giving it the capital letter at the beginning, and say instead of mind with a small m, I make now God as mind with a capital M, because it's a much bigger mind than the mind with a small m, infinitely bigger. That's not enough. That's not enough. She makes that mind synonymous with all the other synonymous terms, which is not so in ordinary language. Yeah? Therefore, the moment we read these capitalized terms, they have a completely different meaning than in the ordinary language, and a completely different meaning even if we take the ordinary language and think about them in a bigger way. Is that clear? Very clear. In the ordinary language, these seven terms are not synonymous. When they are capitalized, they don't mean just those seven terms in a bigger way, but they always mean that they reflect each other in order to be what they are. Mind is never mind without being spirit or soul or principle, life, truth and love. So when we read in the textbook mind, capital M, it is not just mind. It is mind that is at the same time spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love. But naturally, she has to use an abbreviated, a shorthand form of expression and language so that she does not always say, well, God is mind and therefore is also spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. Though, from time to time, she does it. But very seldom, because she can expect from the reader that he does that thinking. Or, as we will see, that if we learn through this week to culture our consciousness in a structured consciousness, where each part hangs together with all the other parts, so that it makes up a whole. If we learn this language, we have a different consciousness. Then mind is a different consciousness than just a big mind. And therefore you can see that when we speak Christian Science language, that the listener has to interpret rightly if he speaks about a capitalized term or not, because in speaking they are the same. Truth, small t, and truth, capital T, when it comes out of one's mouth, it's the same thing. But the listener has at once to select it and say, does he speak about truth with a small t or truth with a capital T? Therefore, a written text is much more accurate than the spoken text, or the text one hears. And this has to be taken in consideration. All right. So we can see we learn a new language. It's more or less the same term, but the content of those terms are absolutely different. Absolutely different. Yes? Okay, so we have another point. Now, we go on in the deduction. So we went on from the infinite one, then through differentiation to the seven synonymous terms, but then we went on and said, but each of the seven synonymous terms differentiates from another synonymous term through characteristic ideas that are specific for each synonymous term. Yes, that's what we are doing in the last class. So let's see how this applies to the synonymic principle. When we now go from the synonymous term to the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms. Well, it is perhaps like this. Perhaps I can give an illustration. Say, if God would be the one who would throw seven stones into a lake. And each stone, what does a stone do? It begins to form a ripple. Say a ripple, around that at the point where it is thrown into the water. And another ripple, and another ripple, and another ripple. Always further and further. It is what we have been doing. We said God is mind. That's throwing the stone into the water. Now, what does it bring about? It brings about all the various ideas around that central point, the circumference, so to say, about the center of mind. And we have these ideas of mind, of law, and of creator, and of action, and of power, and of intelligence. Always a further ripple and a further ripple. And each one of those seven stones forms these ripples. But at some point, suddenly, those ripples interact. They cross each other. And they form new formations. Yes? According to the wave of how big it is, come together, if the lower part comes together with the other lower part, it gives even a more lower wave, or a higher wave, or it flattens out. If a high wave and the higher sense and the lower sense of a wave comes together, it flattens out, it equalizes it. Can you see that it begins to form new formations? And suddenly you have a whole configuration of circles crossing each other and interacting each other until finally perhaps you not even can anymore detect which were the original ripples. Can you see what happens? It's the calculus. We have ideas now coming together, blending ideas with ideas, one ripple of one stone interacting with the ripples of another stone, forming completely new configurations, and we have the build-up of completely new ideas or combinations of ideas, interchange of ideas, which Mrs. Eddy calls the calculus. Now, what about the synonymy principle? That was an illustration. We go back to the synonyms and the ideas, which means naturally that if we have mind that is expressed through ideas of mind, would mean an each idea of mind, because it is the idea of a synonymous term, is therefore under the synonymy principle of that synonymous term. It's not something separate, isolated. There is no isolated idea. Therefore, each idea of a synonymous term is synonymous with a synonymous term. They are never something by itself. They are therefore only an idea. Now we come to that other point which we will do this week. Every idea of a synonymous term is synonymous with all the other idea of that same synonymous term. So that each idea of mind is, so to say, synonymous with every other idea of mind. Because you cannot separate them. They come from mind, and remain in mind, and go back to mind. Yes? So that they are, in a second degree, so to say, synonymous. But the same as with the stones, the seven stones and the ripples intersecting, we can see, therefore, each idea of every synonymous term can only be what it is when it reflects all the other ideas of all the other synonymous terms. Yes? So that an idea of mind is only an idea of mind when it is reflecting every idea of mind, plus reflecting every idea of spirit and every idea of soul and of principle and life, truth and love, or else an idea is not an idea. Yes? Can you see, in the language of spirit, where there is no limits, where everything is infinite in the language of spirit, where we cannot put limits on anything, we cannot limit an idea. We know that somehow theoretically. We may not have been thinking to the last digit really. What it implies? It implies that an idea like intelligence, idea of mind like intelligence, is only intelligence when it is synonymous, when it reflects or is synonymous with all the other ideas of mind, therefore with power, with action, with law, with apprehension, comprehension, insight, foreseeing, foretelling. Only then is intelligence intelligence. Intelligence without power, without action, is not intelligence. Because it would be separate, it would be finite, it would be cut away from the whole cake. It always stays within the whole. But even more than that, intelligence is only intelligence when it reflects all the other ideas of spirit, when it is substance, for instance, in spirit. When it reflects all the ideas of soul, when it is, for instance, unchangeable. When it reflects all the ideas of principle, when it has spiritual power, demonstrative power. When it reflects the ideas of life, that intelligence is eternal, or else intelligence is not intelligence, in the language of spirit, in the language of Christian Science. It must reflect truth, dominion, for instance. Intelligence is only intelligence when it reflects dominion. Or in love, when it reflects fulfillment. Whereas intelligence is not intelligence in the terminology of Christian Science. Do you see that? Can you see that even every term which we use, not only every synonymous term, but every term has in Christian Science a new meaning and a completely different meaning from the meaning in ordinary language? In ordinary language, you speak about intelligence if it is intelligence of the brain, of matter. If that intelligence comes and goes and dies off, isn't that, in the ordinary language, still intelligence? When it goes, when you die? Not in Christian Science. Yeah? Do you see what it means? That the synonymous principle that rules, so to say, in the first generation of the seven synonymous term, and afterwards in the second generation, so to say, if I may call that way, in the realm of ideas, is always synonymous. The moment we contemplate an idea, whatever the idea is, as not synonymous with all other ideas, that idea is no more an idea. It is just a term. Isn't the language of Christian Science a completely different language, though it uses the same terms that are in the dictionary or in Webster? It takes the same terms that we find in the Webster and use it absolutely different. Absolutely different. Isn't that enormous? Isn't it that we speak a new language? A new tongue. The spiritual tongue. Because, although this is perhaps helpful to see, the subject that Mrs. Eddy deals is reality, and that reality is spirit. And spirit means that you cannot put it into any limits. Spirit is something you cannot channelize into a channel or place it at some kind of place in space or in time. It's always everywhere, at every time, at every point in time and space. Therefore, every idea is an idea of spirit, is a spiritual idea. Therefore, every idea blends with every other idea. And only when we conceive an idea blending with every other idea, then it is actually an idea. Before we don't see that as blending with every other idea, it is a term, concept, that's all. so that we find that actually every idea is synonymous with every other idea, which leads us naturally to the great insight that every idea is always the idea of the infinite. That an idea is never less than the infinite. Yes? Because it only describes the infinite from the point of view of ideas. And as every idea cannot be separated from any idea, therefore every idea is reflecting all ideas, infinite ideas, and that's the infinite. Which means in practice, the moment we touch an idea, really as idea, we always touch the infinite, and not just a little part of something. Yeah? Does it now become clear what I put right at the beginning? That Mrs. Eddy was faced with that great proposition, here is the infinite, I have to define it through definitions, through definite terms, without making it finite. To define without making finite. This was the great solution. And she could only do it through this synonymy principle. Yes? So, say in ordinary language, you have, say, intelligence, and that is completely something completely different from, say, eternal. No one out there, the man in the street, would certainly say, no, they are not synonymous. They are completely different. You know, intelligent and eternal, these are two words that have nothing to do with each other. Yes? In Christian Science, they have to do everything to do with each other. Because intelligence will not be intelligence without being eternal. And eternality is not eternality if it's not intelligence. Isn't it amazing? That we were reading our textbook with the old paradigm language, didn't we? We read the textbook and read eternal, said, yeah, eternal. It's an isolated, nice, wonderful concept. Eternal is so long, you know, that you can think about it as long as you like. You never come to the end of that eternality. That's what we were thinking. That's eternal. We're never thinking about eternal. But that has to do with all the other ideas of being. And therefore we were reading the textbook with a false language. Yeah? And we have to read and learn to read the textbook in the new language. And this is quite a job. A beautiful job. And next week I will try with one chapter to introduce this concept, and you will see how very much more comes out of a text the moment you read it in that synonymy principle language, which considers what? What is really that which differentiates the old language from the new language? It is really that the old language was considering a term as having a value of its own. A value of its own. Intelligence had a value of its own. It was intelligence. It was not ignorance. And that's that. And that's the end of it. That's the definition. That's defining intelligence. Whereas the new language doesn't ask what is the value of a term, like intelligence, but ask what are the relationship of that term with all other terms. It asks for relationships. Yes? That's the point. And the moment you ask for relationship, you ask the question of structure. and no more of an atomistic concept. That's the point. So today in orderly linguistics, they begin to see that. They begin to see that the value of a term is wholly determined by its total environment. That's the point. That the value of a term is wholly determined by its total environment. Perhaps you write that down as a key term that goes right throughout the 2 weeks. Can you see? The old language said the value of a term is in the term. And what is that term? You can look it up in the Webster dictionary. There you find it. Whereas modern linguistics sees the term, the value of a term is wholly determined by the total environment, which means in our language nothing else but that the value of a term is determined by the relationship to all the other ideas. So the term intelligence becomes only then intelligence when it is seen in relation to all other ideas of the seventh synonymous term. Can you see? A relation is determining the value, not the thing itself. And this we'll see again and again and again. And therefore we will have to see what the structuralists really say, and perhaps you can write that down too, that reality consists of relationships, and not of accumulation of facts. The structuralist of today sees that there exists no independent element. No isolated ideas. And if we see that, then we have got it. Then we have got a new language, a new paradigm with which we begin to read our text. And the new paradigm in which we begin to think, it's a new language of spirit. We are no more interested what does the term intelligence per se mean, but intelligence is the point of intersection of all relationships that exist with all other ideas. Then we know what intelligence is. Yeah? Isn't it terrific? It's all built on the synonymy principle. So that the infinite is never broken up in parts. And yet the infinite is infinitely diversified, classified, and individualized. That's the way she solved that terrific question, which the mystic couldn't solve and which the natural scientist couldn't solve. All right? We stop here.